This is No Direction's PaizoCon 2018 seminar coverage. PaizoCon 2018 seminar coverage was made possible thanks to the support of the Roll for Combat podcast, as well as the dedication of our team of volunteers. Due to possibly questionable language, this panel is rated Sorry, Ryan.
Sorry, Ryan.
Sorry, Ryan.
Space Taco Bell.
Ours is like so
arcane. It is 3 o'clock. We should perhaps begin this panel. This is the Starfinder Adventure Path Q&A. Who are we?
I'm Chris Sims.
Who are you?
I'm a brand new Starfinder developer on Ruby.
You've never been around any other role-playing game.
I've never ever done any other role-playing game work ever.
Who are you?
I'm Jason Keeley. Who are you?
But what are you?
I'm Jason Keeley.
Yeah, but what?
I'm a developer. All right. I'm the Adventure Path developer.
And I'm Robert.
Oh, yeah, I worked on Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, okay.
That's what it was.
We're moving on. I'm Rob McCurry. I'm the creative director for Starfinder. So this is the Adventure Path Q&A. This is a panel that will likely have some spoilers because we're talking about adventures, and if we can't talk about what's happening in adventures, then there's not much point for the panel. So hopefully if you're playing in it, separate some player knowledge and character knowledge. And so I guess we'll start. We're about ready to wrap up the first Starfinder Adventure Path, Dead Sons, that I started off with, and then Mr. Keeley and Mr. Sims came in.
You worked on some of the Dead Sons, right?
Yeah, came in to sort of finish up. So we're just finishing that up.
Corpse Fleet.
And then we've got some new ones that are coming up, some of which we've announced, and then another one that we have not announced yet, which we will be announcing. So maybe we'll start by talking about those a little bit, and then open it up to questions and just, you know, chat with you guys and see what you want to know about and all that kind of stuff. So what happens after the Dead Sons Adventure Path?
What happens after the Dead Sons Adventure Path is that everyone in the universe is dead. Players will have been murdered in bodies. No. Different spoilers, I guess.
I just snapped my fingers.
Yeah, that could mean anything. starting in August, the Starfinder Adventure Path will be going monthly with 2 3-part adventure paths. So we're both ramping up the volume and then also making them shorter for a brief period of time just to try this new experiment. And because we had some ideas that we felt fit more in a 3-volume arc than in a whole 6-volume arc. The first one that begins in August is Against the Aeon Throne, which you probably all heard about. In this particular one, the PCs are going up against a sort of a roguish element of the Aslanti Star Empire. Not exactly roguish, just sort of like, you're not going to be defeating the entire Star Empire at this point. You're just going to be going up against a particular, another snap. Jesus, we'll all be dead too. For no reason, not a spoiler.
We will all be dead.
Yes, exactly. It's not a spoiler. Okay. We'll all be dead at one point. So this all sort of starts off on a packed world's colony that gets taken over by a faction of the Aslanti Star Empire. And you've got a friend on that colony, and she gets kidnapped, and it all sort of eventually ends up that they found some sort of ancient space starship technology, and you basically have to go into the Aslanti Star Empire, kind of and kind of a spy, kind of born supremacy, kind of thriller esque. Path to get that technology away from the Atlantis driver and rescue your friend. It begins with number 7, The Reach of Empire, which is written by Ron Lundeen, favorite Ron Lundeen. We want to start by number 8, which is called Escape from the Prison Moon. And that's by Eleanor Farron, who is also now one of our developers, which is any Adventure Path writer.
So is Ron. He's also
Ron is also, yes, exactly. We've sort of guessed that we're grabbing all sorts of authors and making them actual employees so they can't write as much stuff, so we're really biting ourselves in the butt. And then that concludes with number 9, the Rune Drive Gambit, which we'll see all sorts of wacky things happening. And whether or not your players will actually get rid of the Rune Drive, do something with the Rune Drive, get it for themselves, destroy it so the Aslanti Star Empire can't have it, was yet to be seen by your players. I know what happens.
Who wrote that one?
Oh, Larry Wilhelm, sorry. I meant to say that, I forgot it. And some of the stuff we're talking about in the back matter for those volumes, we're going to be looking at the Aslanti Star Empire, the whopping 17 other sentient races that the Aslanti Star Empire has sway over.
Whose idea was that?
It was like it was 17.
Mine. That's the officially recognized sentient species, because like, androids are not officially recognized
so
as sentient species by the...
plus humans
well,
is
yeah.
19.
Right.
But they are recognized as glorified toasters.
Yes.
So
they're
yeah,
more of a species. Those are just the officially... Right. It's bureaucracy now.
It's a lot of bureaucracy. And we'll also be looking at some starships of the Star Empire. And we're going to have, in that last volume, have an article about the stewards, which was written by sort of our contract editor and stewards cosplayer, Liz Liddell. She's had this great outfit. I was like, you probably want to write about the stewards, don't you?
Yes!
Once that is over, in the spookiest month of the year, November...
I interrupted. Yes. There's also some information about the Aznanti Star Empire itself.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
a
yeah.
lot more detail than was in the core rulebook.
Oh, definitely.
So,
we've got a whole bunch of stuff in new
like
technology.
The sentient,
like
the
sentient alien species.
Well, that's the thing. Oh, yeah. Well, we'll talk about the history and who's in charge of the Aznanti Star Empire and some new Aeon Stones, some new gear.
So in my last panel, I was talking about how I like the Aznanti Star
that's
Empire.
That's right. Well, of course, Rob's, the Aznanti Star Empire is kind of Rob's baby. And he really wanted to do an AP, and then he was basically unable to develop it, so he gave it to me, and I think I did it proud.
Good.
I'm proud of it.
All right.
But
anyway,
moving,
but back to
moving
November.
On. Yes, back to the spookiest month of the year, November. We'll be starting the next three-part adventure path, Signal of Screams. This is our sort of dark space horror goodness. It all starts with number 10, the Diaspora Strain, written by Chris over here, where the PCs sort of begin a big thing about this one is that it starts at a higher level. So Reach of Empire number 7 is going to start at the first level. It'll take these three bombs will take your players up to 7th level, and then if you'd like, you can actually move straight into number 10 as if you were running a 6-part adventure path, but just a three-part episodes. So this one begins at 7th level, and the PCs, maybe relaxing from their triumph of the Aznanti Star Empire, go to a resort in the Diaspora, and things go poorly.
And you need to be 7th level.
Yeah, starting at 7th level, and things start to go poorly, and leads to all this sort of, like, shadowy madness, and the people sort of, you know, hurting one another and themselves, and all this sort of, a little bit of body horror, a little bit of psychological horror mixed in. From there, as PCs realize they've been, you know, they've got to save the day and save themselves from being corrupted, we move on to number 11, the Penumbra Protocol, which is written by Jenny Jarzabski, and as a sort of one of our first, she's written some scenarios, but she's a first time sort of venture pathfinder, but she's going to take us to the planet Versys, where the sort of which has that sort of dark side and light side. You're going to be on that more in that sort of shadowy dark side area. Looking at the sort of the capital of one of the nations and getting some information on this evil corporation who might be behind all this shadowy badness. And then eventually they'll find out, oh my god, after they've done it and they've gone and maybe defeated them, they'll find out that they're actually on this plane of shadow in number 12, Heart of Night, by Saif Ansari, who did sort of done some work for us on Pathfinder and some of the other science stuff. And there you'll be on the shadow plane and fighting Velstrax, which are what we call Chitons now. And defeating the big bad and maybe getting their soul back. Whew, that was a lot of talking.
Yeah. So we've announced those two adventure paths already. We have not announced what comes after that. That moves through to Chris.
What comes after that is the Dawn of Flame adventure path, which is set in the sun.
Not on the sun.
In the sun.
In the sun.
In the sun.
So the PCs have to discover and stop a threat emerging from the backwoods sun. And that will be a 6-volume AP and monthly.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Monthly is locked in now, and we're going to be going and seeing the 6 versus 3. Now, we want to see how the 3-month APs do, and then we may very well go back to those. But this one's going to be 6. Sorry. Back to you.
So volume 13 is called Fire Starters. It's by James L. Sutter. I don't know if anybody knows who James L. Sutter is.
Never heard of him.
I'm not going to tell you what these are, though.
It's still early.
And 14 is Soldiers of Brass. Or should I tell you what these are?
It's up to you. You can tell a little bit if you want.
So, Firestarters, you The characters are at Far Portal Station near the sun, and they witness a portal that has been stable to the plane of fire get sucked into the sun. And then they have to find out why. So they end up going to the burning archipelago with a scientist from Far Portal Station, and all sorts of shenanigans ensue.
Shenanigans.
Then number 14 is Soldiers of Brass by Crystal Frazier. Number 15 is called Sundivers, and that's when you really go into the sun. That's by Joe Bassini. First of all, you have to find out how to get into the sun without, you know, burning up. And then you use that technology to go into the sun.
Deeper than ever before.
Deeper than ever before.
Yes.
Unless you're in a freak.
And a freaky. Singulars.
Number 16 is The Blind City by Ron Lundeen.
Look at that.
Prolific Ron Lundeen.
In each of these, you kind of explore either more of the Burning Archipelago, or you go deeper and deeper into the sun to find more mysterious things.
So we've talked about the deep cultures, or the idea that there are these deep cultures living inside the sun. So as you go deeper and deeper into the sun of these adventures, perhaps you might discover some of these deep cultures.
Or perhaps something worse. Number 17 is called Conquered Minds. I'm just going to let that one lie. I'm not going to go any further. And number 18.
This is Conquered Minds by
who wrote? Oh, yeah, it's Martin Moreland.
Yeah.
And Starfinder number 18 is called Assault on the Crucible by Jason Tondra, one of our new editors.
Yeah, and so that takes us up through
August of 2019.
Yeah, July of 2019.
July.
So that'll take us up to so that's three adventure paths. We're back to the sixth volume one for that. That's probably all we're gonna say about Dawn of Flame at this point. Maybe a few, but we still got that's still have several months about that. But I think now we can open up to questions about any of the adventure paths. Certainly, we have Dead Sons, and then we have three other ones that we just talked about. So. Anybody have any questions, burning questions that they'd like to know or share something? With the green.
Are these ones, I know that all Dead Sons is going to be sanctioned for organized play. Are all the upcoming ones so far intended to be sanctioned for organized play?
To my knowledge, yes. It's the organized play team is the one who makes those decisions, and that's why it sometimes people are like, why haven't they been sanctioned yet? It's like the OP team is the one who does that. But I think their plan is to do that with all of the adventure paths, just like they do with Pathfinder. So they started right from the beginning with Starfinder because we already had that in place. So I think they should be doing that. Yep.
So for these newer adventure paths, now that like we'll have a little bit more like literature like for the game and Starfinder as a whole like released by that time. Do we see maybe ending at higher levels or like more like now that people have gotten used to the system, maybe ending like outwards like closer to those like end game levels like 16 like 18 plus or something or like taking you all the way through 20 or like has like through now they don't really take you like into those higher 15s or anything, do they? Or
no, they still only go up to about 13.
Okay,
like,
yeah.
You know, like, same with the second part when it starts at 7 goes about 13.
Mm-hmm.
The Dawn of Flame is going to start at 1. Characters at 13th level.
Okay.
We've been bantering with the idea of possibly starting an AP, a 6th volume AP, at a slightly higher level so that we can get you to those 16, 18, 19 level, but we haven't yet landed on that.
One of the things with Signal of Scream, since that starts at 7th, that's the first for Adventure Paths that Paizo is. Paizo's Adventure Paths have always started at first level.
Yeah.
And so this is kind of an experiment to see how it does, because one thing we've noticed, I mean, We're creating a game, we all want to have fun playing the game, but it's also a business, we want to sell books, and Adventure Paths, their sales tend to go down over the run. People buy the first stuff if you can start right off with that, and there's usually fewer sales later on. So we really kind of want to see how that does, and if we have enough people asking for it, and it looks like we can sell enough copies, we'd love, I think, to do starting off higher. So because just with the format, we can't go from 1 to 20.
Right.
Because the Starfinder APs are a little shorter than the Pathfinder APs as well, which means that you can't even get up as high as the Pathfinder ones do. So we'll see. What we have, because we kind of started fresh, we have a little bit of a mandate that we can be more experimental and try out some stuff. So we're looking at that, certainly.
Awesome.
Each chapter in the AP, is there a focus on how long each one, how many hours each one will take to play?
But it always depends.
I know it depends on the group, but is there it's a 6 hour, it's an 8 hour?
It's basically taking you through two or three levels of play, and
maybe that's a better question for the group.
Yeah, has anyone been playing the Dead Sons, for instance?
Yeah.
Someone shout out how long it's taking to get through a single volume.
So we for 12 hours. Book one for us took 8 to 12 hours.
Right.
Book two was more like 16 hours.
Okay. Yeah.
Part two of that was really. There's a lot of things. It's like, okay, well, I don't like the mechanics or some things,
right,
like,
yeah,
survival,
yeah,
things.
Yeah.
Like you haven't really seen otherwise. They're different enough from Pathfinder that
you're spending a bit more time in the rulebook. So,
in general, with the sort of page count we've got, it's probably going to be same 8 to 12 hours per
volume. Yeah, because part of the reason if you're releasing one a month, you got to be pretty dedicated to stick to that G word ready for the next one. Now.
Yeah.
Right. I mean that's.
And that's one of the reasons we started with the bi-monthly release at first. First of all, it was a new game, and so we wanted to see what people's interest was. And we had heard, I worked a lot on the Pathfinder Adventure Path before Starfinder, and a lot of people were like, we don't have time to play through as fast as you're releasing them. But then as soon as we went to bi-monthly, we got a lot of feedback that it's like, we need more adventures for Starfinder. Because there was Pathfinder has so much stuff that there's no lack of things to play. With Starfinder, it became... Okay, but we need more, so that's why we went to the monthly for that one.
I guess it depends on the groups, because like our group, we're lucky if we can get together once a month. So,
yeah.
You know, 6 hours on Sunday, the best we can do once a month kind of thing. So.
And certain volumes, you know, have a lot more customizability, I guess. Like the first volume of Dead Sons, I know just looking at the message boards, like a lot of people kind of, that adventure starts like pretty much the players step off a shuttle onto Absalom Station. There's a number of people that said, we did the shuttle trip on the way and gave the PCs a chance to meet each other, and other groups like let them explore more of Absalom Station and everything. So you can certainly expand them a lot more in a lot of cases as well.
Certainly a case, in any case, in a lot of the adventures, there's travel times to go from one planet to another, and that takes days in game, which any GM, if they want to, can add just role-playing scenes or random encounters with other starships, or just sort of like, you stop off at this asteroid or this weird floating thing in the middle of the drift and have a little side adventure that maybe ties more into your character's backstory than our adventure paths can do, because we don't know your characters. Guys, I've gotten all your emails, but I can't get them all into one AP.
Yeah. So would you say that I'm sure you guys get bombarded a lot from all of us here, about what we're liking, what we're not liking, and most importantly, what we want from the future. Do you guys, just for yourselves, it's more of a personal thing, if you could dedicate one adventure path to something, where would you see yourselves, what would you like to see come, what would you guys like to work on next? I mean, you've already laid out these amazing plans that you already have, but if tomorrow you're we need a new idea, let's go. What would you want to see versus how we would respond to that? What we said, what we want to see.
We just had a meeting about that last week.
Essentially, Signal of Screams is sort of the first adventure path or anything and sort of eyes of history for me. That I sort of started from concept up and did all the outlining and did a lot of the assigning for it, that I'm very excited about, because the thing I didn't mention, and I'm going to mention it now, is because for the first volume, I put it in the back matter, there's an article about horror campaigns. But it's a little bit like what we sort of wrote for Horror Adventure, but we don't have anything like that for Starfinder. So I wanted to go in, and since this AP has a little bit of... some might say mature themes that might not be for everybody. We definitely want to have a content. We want to make sure that we, as a GM, we want to play this, talk here and talk to your players. So I have this article, and it's written by Epidiah Rabishaw, who, if you don't know, is the creator of the Dread role-playing game, the famed horror RPG that Pythonians love, especially me and former Pythonian. So I was really excited to get him to write for us.
It's the Jenga game, where you, the Jenga, instead of dice, you use Jenga.
I'm pretty excited about that. He's written some Chris is probably taking a look at it by now, and just some good advice about how to run horror, and so it's, you know, since we don't have a lot of time hardbacks for Starfinder, I want to get this sort of information out there.
Also has some pretty awesome player options.
Yeah. We throw in some player options in there. To actually answer your question, which one would we pick? Because I threw out like six things when we picked one of them. But I won't say which one we picked. But I have two things that I'm desperately, I'm going to do at some point. Even if I have to murder him. a time travel thing.
Oh, right.
Because of sci-fi, and then a
because sci-fi, and then a
roving Josie and the Pussycats in space style, solving mysteries, maybe real episodic. What do you want to do, Rob?
Let's see what Chris would want to do.
What do I want to do?
I actually
wanted to do something with the unseen. And maybe even like something that takes it a little further into New Age woo-woo land and bring in like the Anunnaki or something like that. And the planet Nibiru.
and Dawn of Flame too, right? I mean, you didn't work.
He's excited about it. We're talking about other things.
Well,
we're
it is interesting that it's just like, you know, single screen is something he wanted to do. Chris was like reading up on the sun. He was like, we should totally do an AP in the sun with the Burning Archipelago. Like,
because going into the sun is crazy. You should die. Right? Your adventure should be, you went into the sun and you die.
I wrote up all the Asante Star Empire stuff in the core rulebook. I really wanted to do an Asante Star Empire AP that became against the Aeon Throne. So I have to start thinking beyond that. One of the things in Dead Suns, this is the spoiler, is we talk about this war between these two incredibly ancient species, the Civ and the Kishali. And we just they've been gone, but I kind of like to play more with this like ancient lost civilization again. That was kind of dropping them in there, dropping those seeds in there, so we can maybe do something with them later. Maybe with the time travel thing, maybe go back millions of years to the Civ Kishali War.
Pre-Gap.
Probably not pre-Gap, but
well, they are though.
They are pre-Gap.
Yeah.
I also want to do a battle of creative director versus creative director. And make like Sutter a kaiju and Rob a creator kaiju.
Yeah, we're here.
So, speaking of the first module for Pathfinder, I'm kind of curious if you guys and actually other people in here, when we played through back in October, we made it to the vampiric squid thingy, which just, you know, murdered us, raped us. It was quite the rough encounter, and I'm kind of curious, you know. We felt like, you know, it was overpowered, but at the same time, we thought that maybe we were doing something wrong.
This is the Garagor call at the end of
where the ship was. And
yeah. So there is a thing. That adventure was written while we were still working on the rules because just how the production schedule did. I also tend to write adventures to be a little deadlier just because. And particularly the first level adventures, that's really easy to do because they're first level PCs. I don't know if there's any kind of just one way to do it, because I know I've heard and seen various feedback that where people have said the same thing, like that last combat was really, really tough, but other people are like, I didn't have any problems at all with my group. And so it's not like I didn't particularly design it for optimized characters, but it was meant to be. I mean, this is the final boss of that adventure, and the reward is getting the ship. So, I think some things that might have affected that combat a bit, since this was the first adventure. I do think that combat runs differently in Starfinder than in Pathfinder. So, a lot of people who are just making the transition maybe hadn't quite figured out as much of that stuff, and I don't know even if we realized it quite as much. So I tried to put in like lots of tips about the game and the adventure. This is the first adventure, so this is how you do things. And maybe we could have gone a little more about, hey, combat's a little bit different. Think about how you're setting things up. And that's something we can go for in the future. But we were trying to hit so many things, you know, like, hey, it's a new game. We're trying to introduce the setting. We're trying to show you how to play it. And yeah, it might have been a little bit too hard at the end, but.
Kind of like pronouncing that monster name.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's an alien.
OK. Can you pronounce it for us again?
Garagicol.
Thank you. You might need to record that.
But before I'm number one, my group's absolutely loved it. Very tough time with the Garagicol. But also the Drift Dead. Absolutely loved the Drift Dead. No one was expecting anything like that. It messed with people's heads because traditionally, you know, you don't ever fight a ghost at first or second level.
Right.
And it was amazing, and all kinds of praise from all people that I run through with. Absolutely love all the APs.
Great, thank you. Oh. Yeah, oh, so it's doing the back first.
One of the things I've heard is people who aren't playing Pathfinder have had a lot of use for the Pathfinder adventure path. In my home group, because of my Starfinder first which I do. Have you heard anybody getting mileage from using the Starfinder adventure pass in other systems?
I haven't heard anything about that so far. Yep.
No, but I mean, we write these adventures for our system, obviously, but like we also try to make good stories and interesting NPCs and such. So seems like it'd be possible. It's always, as always, though, GMs, they want to put in the work to convert a thing to another system, more power to them.
Yeah, I think our primary, what you said, I mean, our goal with the adventure paths is to tell a fun story, you know, that people want to do. And if people want to convert a system, I mean, they certainly can. I haven't seen anything, but you could. Our message boards on Paizo.com are a great place to go to get advice from other GMs and players and stuff. And you can certainly go on there and say, hey, and you may find there are people who have done that and can give you really helpful tips. I'm always surprised by the amount of information that our fans have, you know, when somebody comes up and I want to do this crazy thing, and three or four people will be like, oh yeah, I totally did this, and this thing happened, and that's good. Most of the adventure paths and everything too, if you see people, they'll post after action reports where you can see like, hey, this combat's going to be really difficult, you might want to think about adjusting it or make sure your players are ready for this kind of thing. So check that out. The online community is going to be a really good source of information for that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So for the Dead Sons adventure path, obviously it sort of serves as an introduction to the pack worlds that are visited, to Starfinder in general. But as I hear you talk about, you know, the shorter APs and the sun-based one, it seems more focused on a particular location or a particular theme rather than sort of a survey of, you know, Absalom Station, Castrovel, etc. Is that intentional, or is that a direction that I'm just perceiving that isn't actually there, and we can go back to these sort of universe-spanning arcs and future APs, or just how is from an AP development standpoint, is there a goal one way or the other to say we want to tell these galaxy-wide stories, or we want to answer the question of, you know, what is in the sun, or what happened?
That's an interesting question, because there's a lot of different factors to sort of weigh. I mean, like Dead Sons, like you said, we really wanted to use that to show off the setting. So it started in the pack world, and then you started going outside of that to really show the scope. And then with Against the Aeon Throne, even though like that starts in the pack world or in a pack world's colony, so it's not in the pack world at all. And then like Jason said, you actually go into the Aslanti Star Empire, and that's the first thing. But because of that, we then wanted to bring it back to the pack world, because that's where we have most of the information that's been put out so far, so the GMs can use that. I wouldn't say that it's just kind of like a more of a feel for like, well, have we been focusing in one place too long? Maybe we want to go somewhere else. One thing I learned working on the Pathfinder adventure paths is, and it may change for Starfinder, but people don't like as much the ones that go all over the place, because if you have a few adventures set in one place, the PCs get, you know, involved with the NPCs and everything, and they kind of start feeling like this place is home, and then they leave and they never come back. And Curse of the Crimson Throne is a good example of that. If you're from that Pathfinder one, you start off in Corvosa for the first half of it, and then you leave and never come back. And it's and the players have put all this investment into Corvosa, and now it feels like sometimes that maybe there's not the payoff, and so we have to kind of think about that too. I mean, here we have spaceships, so you can always go back and forth, but...
Well, and something like Dawn of Flame, that you really dig into what the sun is all about, and
what's there and add more detail to the setting in that way. And I think that most APs do that sort of thing, like expand the setting in specific ways.
Well, the setting is so big in Starfinder too. I mean, we can either do a big galaxy-spanning thing. We can do something that's just, I mean, you know, like the sun is a huge thing all itself, and or any one planet could host numerable adventure paths. So it's just kind of like what feels best for the story that we want to tell, and hopefully hit lots of different areas over the whole course of the game. See in the back there.
So. Kind of going off on this note, how the next APs are going to kind of have themes and stuff, is it outside the realm of possibility to sort of be like a player companion? Mostly because right now I have a mechanic that's stuck in Castrofall that's praying that trees grow circuit cards.
At the moment, what we've been trying to do with these is we don't have the capacity to fully do, you know, the Pathfinder Adventure Path and get that laid out and put out. But what I've been trying to get done is that the first page, maybe two, of the adventure path is kind of acting like a little bit of a mini player's guide. Not necessarily you would print out and give to your players, but it's like, you need some connections to, you know, this person that gets kidnapped. Here are reasons that you might, your players might have connections to this person who gets kidnapped, and why, again, you know, and give you an idea of generally what's going to be happening, you know, with the adventure, the campaign outline, you get an idea of what's going to happen. Same with Signal Screams, it's like, why are you going to this resort? And at that point, you know, then you get stuck. You're not stuck there, but you get caught up in all of this. No matter why you were there in the first place. But it's important to get that sort of like, oh yeah, no, because we're famous, or we have won a contest or something like that, that we can spend this 3-week vacation that goes terribly wrong.
Or we won a contest.
Yeah. Or stole a contest or whatever. Yeah, yeah. So we're trying to give a bunch of ideas so that you can have that conversation with your players before the game starts.
And we also thought that certainly at the beginning with Dead Sons, we had just had the core rulebook out, and so really the player's guide was anything in the core rulebook, because that's all there is. And you know, maybe as we go, you know, Pathfinder has a decade worth of classes and races, and although we keep adding a whole bunch of new races in there, the system is still pretty small, so we do try to make, I mean, like, Castrovel for a mechanic is maybe not the best thing, but there are some computers in that adventure too, you know, that the mechanic might be able to go with. And I think maybe once we expand and there's a whole lot more options, we might need to do that. But right now we still pretty much have the core rulebook is where most of our stuff is coming from.
Plus you have an exocortex, right?
Oh no, he took the drone. So
the mechanic's gonna have plenty of more chances to shine after you get off the edge of that.
I keep telling him, I'm like, just wait till like books 3 and 4. You're gonna like shine. You're gonna be like the MVP of your entire party. But right now you're just like stuck in the middle of the forest. Like, why did I get here?
He's a flame weapon. That'll take care of the forest.
Oh. Hey, look, we have a path now.
Do you have a question?
Yes. With the upcoming adventure paths, how is the balance of Starship content versus personal scope content?
We're still kind of leaning towards essentially like one Starship combat-ish per adventure volume, right? And the tricky thing about it is you always have to find out where it's going to be. It needs to be at such a place where the PCs have just either gained that level to get the tier so you can find the right match, or it's at the end that right is they're about to, so you can, by then you know what tier the Starship is going to be, so that when you present the bad guy, that doesn't get overbalanced or underbalanced or what have you. There's
two.
There's sometimes there might be two. Number 10. I've been trying to think of, they all end up with a little bit here and there. And as always, we sort of like, you know, some of them can be just with some good roles or some good role playing. You might be able to bypass this one if you want to jump. So they're not like mandatory, but you know, it is a part of our system. We want to use it as much as, you know, when it's appropriate.
What about Dawn of Flame? How much Starship? Do you have a sense yet? How much?
At least one per volume.
Okay.
I guess what that was being asked, considered adventure paths where there is a lot more.
Sure. I mean, you know, again, it turns out to be, we don't want to overbalance it because it is not biggest part of our system, but it's there, and you know, when the story might call for it, if there is something that requires fleet battles or whatever, we might, you know, at that point have a little subsystem or something like that in that volume, or if there's another book that comes out later, what have you. But, you know, if the story says go for it, then yeah, we'll have lots of that.
Volume 13 opens with Starship
Combat. A lot of them sort of open or end with or have it right smack dab in the middle, so sort of levels work out.
I mean, obviously, though, if you look at the core rulebook and how much is given to starships and how much is given to characters and all the rest of the game, I mean, we're still, it's still a game with characters and starships are added on there, but I think, you know, if we have like a good story to tell, maybe if we do some expanded starship rules in the future, we might, that might be something that we could look at.
One of my favorite Pathfinder APs was Skull Chapels. I was really excited when I got the core rulebook. There's the Diaspora, and there's Free Captains, and now we even have a, you know, theme for it. Have there been thoughts about doing an AP largely based around Starship Combat, like Skull Chapels based around Ship Combat?
It's on. I think it's on the big list of Space Pirates, be them. And then, you know,
yes, the answer is yes.
The answer is yes.
I did the skull. I worked on the Skull and Shackles adventure path. That was actually, I think, the first one that was my whole thing to outline everything. So I like that stuff too. At the same time, we don't want to be too derivative of what we've already done in Pathfinder, but it would be, I mean, that kind of thing. I could think Skull and Shackles and Kingmaker are both two things that I think similar themes would work really well for Starfinder, you know, whether it's colonizing a planet for Kingmaker or being space pirates and going around. So, yeah, it's certainly...
You could be space privateers.
Yeah, against the pirates.
Yeah, totally.
Cyber Skull and Space Shackles. You heard it here first.
Yeah, Cyber Skull and Space Shackles. All right.
I'm so good at naming.
Yeah.
So I feel like just in like pop culture in general, like I feel like sci-fi is really on... really on a rise in popularity and like in our movies and in books and writing. What I really like about all the content you guys put out is that it is very original. Like there's like, you know, you guys have a lot of original ideas still, and I feel like it's in a playground that is starting to get a little, like could very well get crowded soon. So like, do you guys find yourselves making, like, you know, like having to fact check yourselves a lot, like making sure that this is still original? Like if Jason came up with an idea and brought it to Chris, he'd be like, oh yeah, they did this on Star Trek. Are you like, oh, okay, well, I gotta, like, you know, how hard is it for you guys to keep putting out such great original content in a medium that I feel like is starting to get a little, not saturated right now, but could potentially get there in the near future?
That's a really good question, actually.
If you boil down a lot of stories, you can kind of see the skeletons are the same.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, spoilers, Dead Sun is about a giant super weapon. We ever heard about that before? That you need, you know, like, so if you really...
If you want to make it that simple.
If you simplify it, it's sort of the same. And then what you do is then you take that sort of seed of an idea that, you know, the Atlantis Star Empire and it's sort of... what was I trying to say? You know, they're sort of a bit of their aesthetic with the Aeon Guard that's in AA has this sort of stormtrooper aesthetic. But what you do is you, that seed of faceless, armored, bad MF-er warrior, right? But then you put a spin on it. These guys have these cool Aeon stones, and they're different. So it's all about finding a way to spin the kernel, essentially, I think.
We did have something else. More often, I think we have a thing with like names, and we'll like, oh, we have this really cool name, and then somebody Googles it or is like, that's the main character in this anime. And we're like, oh, you know, and so it's like, but this sounded so great.
Like the Alien Legion.
The Alien Legion, which I knew, I couldn't remember exactly what it was, but
So the Aeon Throne, the Aslanti have an alien part of their army, and because they think that humans are superior, so they've got to cordon off the aliens.
They can't have people help them fight.
Yeah,
superior they can't shoot at them.
I want to call it the Alien Legion because it's made up of aliens to the Aslanti, and it's kind of like a French Foreign Legion. And then
registered
we're like,
trademark, Rob.
Yeah, because it's like an entire comic series or something. Yeah. And it's like, well, I guess we can't call it that. But I think
we ended up calling it the Good Time Pals.
Yeah, exactly. The Happy Tree Friends or something. No,
with General Barney.
Yeah, but I think what Jason, I was going to say something, I forgot.
See you, Chris.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was just curious, and I haven't done a lot of the adventure paths. I'm running Dead Sons, and I played the first Pathfinder one, the Giants. But how often is like downtime considered as far as creating an adventure path? Like time in between adventures or time for careers or professions to happen, things like that in between?
That's a good point. Sometimes we have to, like, because we have the, here's the world threading, you know, you have to stop the threat. But also, you know, but you know, make time. We have this, we have the journey, the starship journeys, in which a lot of times maybe you wouldn't be able to necessarily, you know, to craft things to sell on Space Etsy because they're so far out into the drift. But for the most part, downtime of just sort of like making stuff for yourself, having conversations with the crew, and granted you're there with just a party, so there's not a whole lot of necessary room for going out and talking to, you know, having relationships with strangers or what have you. But a lot of times, you know, there's a lot less of like having those journeys aren't as long though still, even though they are long as they are in fantasy. I feel like I've not actually finished this sentence.
Oh, finish it.
Thank you.
One thing we try to do in the adventure paths is not put sort of set timers on things to let GMs kind of do that. You know, it's like the second volume doesn't have to necessarily, I mean, I would say number one, Dead Sun's number one, and number two are the exception that proves the rule, because that ends on a cliffhanger, like you fly out and you get attacked and, oh, go to number two. Usually we don't do that so the GMs can sort of, you know, put in their own content and that sort of thing. I think it's a little, in Pathfinder, it's kind of more important because you have a lot of crafting and that takes more time and resources than it does in Starfinder. Plus with the sort of built-in travel times on the spaceships, that does build in some downtime. But we try not to kind of hard code that in there to leave it sort of open so that there could be, you know, a year even between volumes. Could be, depending on the adventure.
Yeah. So you do consider it then.
Yeah.
So you think about it.
Okay.
I remembered what I was going to say about the lots of sci-fi things. I think one thing that Starfinder...
Look at
this.
No, is because it's a science fantasy game, being able to put magic in there lets us do a lot more interesting things. Like, there's not a whole lot of science fiction that I've seen that all takes place inside a sun, for example, you know. But we've got a bubble city, a magical bubble city inside the sun. I'm like, well, that's a cool place to set an adventure path. And then the sun itself. So I think that helps us in some ways get through that. That was what I was going to say.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
So in regards to future Starfinder modules, anything in the talks in regards to the mystery of what happened to Galarian the missing memories?
Most likely not. That's one of the... We talked a little bit about this earlier today in our Secrets of the Pact Worlds panel, because that's kind of a thing. By having Galarian being missing, it's a way to sort of keep the two games separate because they share a setting to a certain extent. And what we don't want is one game, or what happens in one game, influencing what happens in the other thing. You know, if they wanted to do something that completely changes the face of Galarian in Pathfinder, then it would raise a question, well, why isn't that reflected in Starfinder? And we don't want to have to... We want to be able to tell the stories in Pathfinder and the stories in Starfinder that we want to tell. So that's kind of our way of separating them out. The gap itself of the memories, that's kind of a thing that we can play with and the GMs can, because we talk about sort of nibbling at the edges and how it's not exactly the exact same time period everywhere. So that's a little way that we can kind of explore and play around with that. But again, keeping, you know, anything that happens in our adventures for Pathfinder, well, something happened in the gap that maybe changed that or did something, so we don't have to worry about that, because otherwise it kind of cuts off the creativity, or could do that on both sides. It
sounds like the work of an unseen menace.
Oh. Mm.
Kind of off his question, but with that, are you gonna have, like, I don't know, not necessarily like a full explanation, but kind of like, oh well, kind of, you know, little bits and pieces, kind of just to give something, but just not the whole explanation, kind of thing, kind of like little breadcrumbs, I guess, or something.
Probably not. I mean, we kind of at Paizo, both with you know, the Galarian setting and with the Pact Worlds and everything, is they're kind of built, both of them are kind of built around this core mystery. In Pathfinder, it's about what happened to Aridin and the death of prophecy. And once the question is always more interesting than the answer, because you have this question or this mystery, players, GMs can come up with their own ideas. We can come up with ideas and that kind of stuff. As soon as we answer it, then it's like, well, and there's, it's always going to be, you know, not as exactly what somebody else might have had in their head. And right. And so that's kind of something that we want to, if you want to play around with it in your own game, you know, we're totally fine with that. We're probably not going to do it officially because that's the whole point, is this right. is the mystery. This is the big mystery of the setting.
So that yeah, that would be good because then, like you said, they can kind of do your own thing.
Yeah.
At least until you guys decide to answer it and then piss everybody off.
But for 10 years,
with everybody.
For 10 years in Pathfinder, we haven't done that, so we haven't given away that mystery.
What about the drift ripping apart everything else? Is that going to be an adventure path sometime?
It's on the list too. Yeah, it's on the list too.
I don't want to report everything. The Great Beyond is really, really, really big. So, you know, and the Drift's only been around for 300 years. So, yep.
Did the David Brand novel Sundiver have any influence on Pathfinder?
It certainly had influence on the fact that the name was the same. But, Chris.
No, I don't think that it has. I mean, it shares the name, but I think that that's about it. Because. Mostly because going into the sun the way we are relies heavily on fantasy more than that novel did. Because if I remember correctly, that novel just kind of goes into part of the atmosphere of the sun. Is that right? Or,
and well, a lot of the themes are kind of on the going into the sun was kind of the science fiction trope or mystery.
Yeah.
It was kind of a lot of the mystery.
And this is more like New Frontier type adventure, in my opinion.
I think we have time for like maybe one more question. Oh, maybe two.
Yeah, one or two. Unless any more questions?
No one has any more. Yeah.
So, when you guys how often do you guys play this in a? Are you guys able to play these Starfinder and Pathfinder games without putting too much of your own critical eye into it, like? Oh crap! We messed that up. Maybe we got to go back and hopefully. Next time we'll fix that or do something. Are you guys actually able to sit back and enjoy these games too without feeling like it's like you're taking shop home with you or taking work home with you in that kind of sense? Like, are you actually able to enjoy it? Kind of like this, like that. Or we all have been doing.
Well, in the dev game that we play regularly, I play a Skittermander icon. So yeah, I have.
Yeah, Chris has fun with it. And you have fun with it, too.
I do. I'm playing a Bantrid from the Pack Worlds book who rolls around everywhere. And
yeah. So we can get a little kooky with it. So that's how we have fun with it. We just kind of go, yeah, woo. And then sometimes we'll hit a rules thing. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Okay, keep moving. We'll deal with it later. Let's have fun.
It's kind of like in any sort of game, even if it's not something that you've worked on, you know, there's always something that's like, well, wait, what do I do here? Well, I guess I need to figure it out as the GM. And so if you're still GMing something that we've worked on, it's just like, oh, maybe we should have done that. But
yeah.
I think also, but maybe if we find something really big, we would say, oh, we should fix that. If we do something similar, we should fix it.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It doesn't come up too much.
But we still enjoy it, I think.
Yes.
You guys having fun?
Yes.
Please? Okay, thank you.
I mean, I play in two games, so.
That's true. Yeah, you're playing.
So, yep. A setting by another company, you may have heard, was once famously described as the Maltese Falcon meets the Mummy meets Raiders of the Lost Ark. I'm wondering, like, how you would describe your home campaigns in terms of, you know, science fiction genres or movies or properties.
The one that the dev game we're playing is. How the heck do I describe it? We're running through the society scenario since, you know, in terms of like we don't get to see them that much, so let's get to take a look at them so we know what the sort of our other half is doing. And it's just a mishmash of weirdos. The cantina scene goes out of the cantina. I think would be
the cantina scene. Oh yeah,
goes out for a party.
It's the morning after
backflips and live streaming. Does backflips? Lots of shooting.
Meets YouTube, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about your?
What about your other home?
I don't know. I guess I'd call it like the Neverending Story meets Guardians of the Galaxy. I don't.
There you go.
Because there's like this consuming force in this. Story that is threatening us, and we need to solve it before and go back in time and go forward in time.
Oh,
what the hell is that?
Yeah.
There isn't a talking raccoon, though.
Not yet.
There's lots of Yosoki, though.
Which are, can be almost basically right raccoons. I mean, put the my shadow on
one of them is Rocket.
There. Yeah.
Yeah. So, if there's no more questions, thank you all for coming. Are there any more questions? Yeah. No, good. Thanks all for coming.
All right, thanks.
Thank you for joining us for another PaizoCon 2018 seminar recording. Special thanks to the KDCon team, including Justin Sluder, Ryan Hiller, Stephen Glicker, and the entire Roll for Combat crew. No Direction's PaizoCon coverage would not be possible without their tireless effort. Find this and other great Pathfinder podcasts. Visit nodirectionpodcast.com.